I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 420. I love it, and I hate it at the same time. This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech, gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to another brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm A-okay.
Aw, that's good, because it's better than B-okay.
Okay. I get what you did there.
You see what I did there?
I'm clever.
I am clever. Oh my god. Well, I've had a really good week.
Good, I'm glad to hear that.
I don't know about your week.
No, not as good as I would have liked it to be.
But, you know what?
I'm alive though, so...
So, right there, you're on top, you're winning, you're ahead of the game.
Yes.
Okay? It's a really good time to be a gamer. You wanna know why?
Why?
Because the Nintendo Direct went down at like... We're donk in the morning.
Like?
6 in the morning.
So, like Nintendo's press conference at E3, like, a few years ago.
Yeah, it went down at 6 in the morning.
Ass crack of dawn, but not a single muffin or bagel to spread.
Ass crack of dawn. Like, right at the, like, the nook right at the top there. Like, before it becomes, like, Cracktopia. Right there. But lots of stuff coming out of it. Okay? We're closer to February, which means...
Your birthday!
I wasn't going to say my birthday. I was going to say...
Your birthday!
We're closer to the Order 1886. We're closer to Saints Row 4, re-elected, which is the updated version for the new consoles, with the Get Out of Hell content. We're closer to more Amiibos. I mean, we're closer to a whole bunch of shit. So, it's a good time to be a gamer.
And especially if you like Nintendo.
So I want to talk about that a little bit. It's also a good time to be an anime fan. You know, we've got a bunch of new seasons of things popping off, which is really cool. I'm going to, maybe, you know, time permitting, talk about a couple of them that I would like to recommend for people. And I know it's a good time to be a fan of the K and J and Tay dramas. Taiwanese.
Right.
Because you got K-dramas.
Mm-hmm.
You got J-dramas.
Right.
And then you got Tay-dramas.
And you have A-dramas, which are American dramas.
American drama ain't got no drama.
Man, I love that now I can remember watching soap operas, like, with Mom. And then watching J-dramas and K-dramas, and she's like... There's a lot more going on in K and J dramas.
There's so much more
substance.
She's like,
fuck Guiding Light.
Like, there's like substance and like...
Bold and the Beautiful, fuck that. There's more intrigue in this one episode of this one show.
The first episode of this one show.
Yeah.
And there are 56 more after it. This is crazy.
But anyway.
So, with that said, I don't even know where to start. And I think I started last time.
But
I can't remember.
You can go first again.
Though. I can?
Yeah, right. You've got a lot more information than I do.
I don't have a lot more information. I just have, like, a chunk of information. So, I'll start with a Nintendo Direct, because I think it's funny, frankly, for me to talk about Nintendo. I've made no bones about not being a massive Nintendo fanboy, which is kind of funny because my nickname in high school was Yoshi.
Right.
Because I was, like, addicted to all of the Yoshi games. And the Mario games for a long time. But for me, I kind of like, by the time I got through high school, I really started enjoying action platformers more than just puzzle platformers.
Okay.
And so I grew out of my Nintendo phase. Now, that's not to say that I don't appreciate still a really good Nintendo game. As I've mentioned on many a podcast, the whole reason why I own a Wii U was for Bayonetta 2.
Yep.
And that's mostly because I'm not a huge Mario Kart player. I like to play with friends when I can get a nice group together, but it's not like a console mover for me. And again, I enjoy Mario Party when I have people to party up with. You know, because Mario Party, to me, it's not as much fun when it's you versus 7 AI.
Right.
So I really enjoy it more when almost all of the characters are being played by people, as opposed to all the characters being played by AI.
Right.
And I don't have it like that where I have 4 or 5 people over to my place regularly. So I'm not a regular, like, Mario Party player. I love Zelda, but Zelda platformers are always few and far between. I'm not really all that big into some of the, what I would consider, filler arc games between Zelda releases. Although I'm going back and forth on the remastered Majora's Mask.
That's right.
Which we'll talk about, because that was brought up on the Direct. That's already sold out.
Yeah, of course.
On the collective
edition. Hello, are you surprised?
No, not in the least. But I'm not a huge Nintendo person. I'm also not a huge Sony person. And I'm a fairly large Xbox person.
So you're Microsoft. You're more of a Microsoft person when it comes to consoles.
Well, you know, I am an Xbox MVP.
Right.
And I have, for the longest time, gamed more on my Xbox than my other two consoles. So if someone was to say, like, what's your king console, I would have to say that it's an Xbox right now.
Well, because the only thing you're playing on your PS4 right now is Destiny.
Correct. Destiny is the only thing that I'm playing on the PS4 right now. And if the digital edition of Destiny had all the maps available, not just including the exclusive ones that PlayStation got, if those maps had been available day one on the Xbox, I would have got it for the Xbox.
But then we never would have played together.
True that. So I'm glad that they had all the exclusive stuff, because it was enough exclusive stuff to make me get the game on the PlayStation. And mostly I game more on my Xbox because the controller for long periods of time is much more comfortable for my hand. It's going to be available on the 13th. What wasn't known before and now is that it's going to be accompanied by a new 3D XL, which is themed for the game.
Right.
Now, I have said many, many, many times that I loathe the fact that Nintendo keeps coming out with quote-unquote new 3DSs. Mm. Ooh, we made the screen bigger. Ooh, we made the screen not bend. Give us your money. It's, you know, only 4 months after we came up with a new 3DS, but now we've got one that does 3D. Okay, now we've got one that's a Super XL, and it comes in gold, which you can't get it. Like, they're worse than Apple, I feel like, coming out with new iPhones.
Okay.
Like, I feel like every time I spit, it's like, Nintendo has a brand new 3DS, and this one runs on cheese. Like, it's ridiculous. And don't get me wrong, I do like the themed 3DSs. I think that that, especially for collectors and older gamers who have those really beloved titles, being able to get their hands on a themed one, like, you know, ones that are reminiscent of the original NES system or Super NES system, those kinds of things. I think that that is fine, but I feel like, you know, but I feel like it's like when console bundles, you know, become branded and come out for games. It's just another way to play grab ass with my pocket. And I don't have a lot of ass left in that pocket.
Oh, you got lots of ass.
No, I got no ass. So, I both love the themed Majora's Mask 3DS XL and hate it at the same time because it's just another fucking minor tweak to a device to get more money, and there's nothing wrong with the 3DS's, 3D XLs, I should say, that are out there. So, whatever. I don't know. I'm not all that thrilled. So I won't be getting the themed 3DS XL. I barely touch
my... Your 3DS as it is.
My 3DS as it is. I basically only take it out to shows for street passes. And, because I've pretty much done all the things in Animal Crossing that I'm wanting to do. Until they come out with a new Animal Crossing. However, there are some things that I do like about the new 3DS XL.
Okay.
It does have Amiibo support, so you'll be able to use Amiibos with certain games on the platform, which, for anybody that's collecting Amiibos, that just extends their value and their life, which I think is good if you're going to keep that as a moving piece of your economy. Then you need to do that. Additionally, shit ton of games. Fire Emblem games.
Yay! That's what I was thinking about the other week, and I was like, you know what the name of that is? It's Fire Emblem. But I forgot. It's Fire Emblem.
Yep. They talked a little bit about Project Steam, which was one of the things that I was interested in coming out of E3. But I think, like, the first thing that made me happy from the direct, where I was like, all right, I really need to watch this. Right now, you can go to the Wii Store and you can download, get, own, have Mario Galaxy 2.
Ooh, all right.
Yeah.
I liked Mario Galaxy.
I loved Galaxy. I couldn't finish it because I was really bad at it. But I really, really, really did enjoy it. So Galaxy 2 is available. Oh, yeah. And the Metroid Prime trilogy games.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all on there. And I was like, oh, that's a nice nostalgia, like, bring it back to the people type piece. I'll run with that. So I thought that that was great. As I go through my notes here, because I don't want to mess anything up, so I actually prepared. I'm not really all into the Pokemon game, Pokemon Shuffle, but...
I like Pokemon games, but I am not a fan of Shuffle.
Yeah, but there's another one, so there's that. And the new Amiibos coming include Charizard.
Yay!
So...
Of course, he's iconic. It was either going to be him or Gyarados.
Yep. Wario, Pac-Man, Ness is coming.
Okay.
They're also going to do another run of Marth Amiibos, even though they stopped it, because the Fire Emblem game that's coming is going to have support for Amiibos, so you need to be able to, Nintendo hopes, that you'd be able to have Marth available.
Right.
For that. So smart. That's happening. In addition to the new Amiibos that I mentioned, they're also going to do a series of Super Mario Amiibos, and they're all going to have separate designs. So this is, like, the one thing with Amiibos that I feel like it's going to get tired real quick is, like, the 80 bajillion Marios that it appears that you're about to be able to have.
Oh, Metal Mario, Fire Mario,
Catsuit Mario, like... That's a lot of Marios to have data on and using games and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm a little concerned that that may be the piece that burns people out on Amiibos. It could Amiibos. Be. So hopefully,
it would burn holes through people's wallets, like,
hopefully,
bam.
Hopefully, Nintendo will calm it down a little bit on those. There's also going to be some additional designs for the core players, so like Peach and Toad and stuff like that. And you're going to be able to use those guys with Captain Toad's treasure tracker. So money's going to be coming out of people's wallets even more. One thing that surprised me wasn't so much Amiibos being able to be used in Mario Party 10, because we all knew that.
That was a given.
The thing is that if you already have Amiibos going that you have save data in, stored in from Smash Brothers, in order to use those same Amiibos in Mario Party 10, you gotta erase that data.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sacrifice.
Yeah. So if you've been doing nothing but working with your Mario that you came bundled with the game, and so that's been the only character that you've built up in Smash Brothers, and now if you want to use that character,
you have to delete everything that you've already that worked data. And built up. Like, fuck that noise.
That is some fucked up shit. Like, for real, fucked up. So I hope that Nintendo fixes this, because people are not going to get two sets of Amiibos of the same characters.
They certainly
aren't.
So that
they can play both Smash Brothers with them and Mario Party 10. Like, the draw is that you can have the one character that you can use in multiple games. If I'm now going to get to a point where I basically have my Smash Brothers set and then my set for everything else, Amiibos are going to die.
Yep.
And they're going to die fast. And Nintendo is not going to be printing money hand over fist anymore. So they need to work that shit out. And they need to work it out quick. So that was one of my I'm not really happy about that thing.
Tell us something that you are super, super happy about then.
So Namco Bandai basically has been working on a secret project that's still very secret.
Oh.
But what they have said is that it's going to be exclusive for the Wii U.
Okay.
That it's going to be a free download.
Okay.
And it's going to be a multiplayer game for up to 4 people. So free to play, possibly fighter game.
Okay. Clay Fighters, they're bringing Clay Fighters back.
Dude, I had that thought. Could you imagine if Clay Fighters came back?
Oh my god, I was terrified half the time for Clay Fighters.
Like, that would be amazeballs. Amazeballs. So that, I thought, was cool. There was an announcement about Xenoblade Chronicles. I'm not an RPG-er, so I kind of tuned that out. The one that I keep messing up all the time is Mario vs. Donkey Kong Tipping Stars. Every time I see the title, I always say Tripping Stars.
Because they trip balls.
And I'm just like, no. This is a kick game. This is not right. I can't say that. But, I mean, the list goes on and on. There's an Ace Combat game, and it's going to have Amiibo functionality. Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate is going to use the new 3DS control scheme, because they added, like, another stick to it thing control. So there's another button on it. It's crazy. Like, Nintendo really did go all out with this thing. And then there was a indie game. It's a shooter from a dev called VD. And the thing is called Ironfall Invasion. And I gotta tell you something. It really... Really?
Really?
Fucking looks like Gears of War.
Okay, but it's not.
But it's not. But it so looks like blatantly an homage to Epic and that game.
Okay.
Which isn't a bad thing, because I think that's one of the things that's really been missing on the Wii U, is like a good shooter.
Yes,
I agree. So they deserve one. But like, take a look at that one, because it legit looks like Gears of War. Just saying. Legit. So, like, there's a couple other things that were there. Splatoon, which is coming out on the Wii U, as you know.
I know Splatoon.
There's going to be a Splatoon Plaza in the, like, specifically for it in the Wii Funko Land thing. Which I think is smart, because it's such a unique game for the platform. I'm actually kind of surprised a little bit that there wasn't one for Bayonetta.
Okay.
But Splatoon's going to have one. So all in all, it was a really good Direct. I thought the Nintendo came out with a great amount of content. There's a little something for everybody in there. If you're not into the RPG stuff, well, guess what? You got the Mario Party, you've got the Galaxy 2 Give, you've got the Metroid Prime trilogy in there, which I believe, because I'm not a huge Metroid player, but I believe Prime was when the game first switched to first player perspective.
Okay.
From the
third. I don't know. I didn't play any of the Metroid
games. I played the side-scrolling ones, and I love them. But I think I only played, like, the beginning part of Prime, and then I moved on to something else. Yeah, I think I moved on to PN03 on my GameCube. But there's something for everybody, and I think that really that's the way these types of events need to go down, is that there needs to be a little something for everybody that's new and improved and interesting, so that people all across the board are revved up about it, as opposed to just talking about the same three things coming out of it. So I think the Nintendo did a really good job on that. But they just need to let me buy the Zelda game now.
Take her money!
Take my dollars! Damn you! So with that said, that's my piece on gaming. What do you have, Panda?
I've been watching a lot of J dramas lately. I was really big into my K ones for a while.
Right.
But while I waited for all the animes that I'm watching on Crunchyroll to release their next video, I was like, let me find something else I could possibly...
Everything got janked by New Year's.
I was like, oh no, 3 more days? No! What am I going to do until then? Destiny? I guess.
Yep.
And that's kind of what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, no. I need to watch something. I need to watch something new. So I looked to see what was simulcasting off of Crunchyroll. And I came across 2 series that just started last week. So, they only have their first episodes, but once again, I like to stipulate that a really good series should be able to catch your attention and make you want to watch episode 2. So, like, I put it under my test of, is this a good series or not? So, I have 2 that I want to talk about, and they're both good for very different reasons.
Okay.
And if you happen to like both genres, I happen to, so I know I'll follow both of these. If only one of them appeals to you, I will still recommend that you watch both of them. Comedically, I found both of them to be strong and entertaining. I feel like K and J dramas understand the right format for building serial comedy throughout a series and not just have like that one character who, oh, slips on the banana peel and everybody laughs. And every time that person shows up, oh, he's going to slip on. Like, they make
right,
they comedy don't. Comedy situational. And not
well,
just like
a... Well, it depends on the drama, because they do have the series where you have that dedicated slapsticky comic relief.
I feel like everyone, main characters, will have jokes, but you'll have, like, your slapstick joke. You might actually have that joke that you don't get until after you watch the entire series. You'll have those running gags that are in the background, but then eventually become a pivotal point in one of the filler episodes.
I'm just saying, though, in the melodramas, that's the case. Yeah. In the things that are not the melodramas, it's the opposite.
Like, I mean, I just love that they have such a great formula for building. I mean, it's not even just building up comedy. You can apply this to anything in a series. Building up suspense, tension, you know, romantic. Like, there's a great way, depending on how
it's
you
shoot
it. It's
just a different approach, but it works.
It works phenomenal. And I'm like, oh, I know exactly where you're going with that. And, of course, I'm along for the ride. So let me talk a little bit about the series in question. So the first one is the one that, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, I need to see what this is about. Because, as you know, most, you know, J-dramas and K-dramas, If there's going to be a romantic angle, it's usually, you know, a girl who they say is plain and ugly, but she's never plain and ugly.
No, they're never plain and ugly.
You know, or, and they're never, oh, I don't know, fat.
No.
Either. You get
well, unless you watch the My 200 Pound. There's
but she's only that big for, like, maybe the first 20 minutes
of the
movie.
I don't know how to
watch it. She was big, but then she loses a ton of weight and becomes thin.
Okay.
So, they started off really, really good. Started from the bottom, and now they're here.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But, anyway, so in this series, I was surprised because on the front of the cover art that they showed a plump lady who wasn't ugly or anything, but a plump lady in a turtleneck, and in the background was this, like, you know, standardly attractive man holding luggage and a creepy old man kind of berating him a little further back. So I thought it was really surprising because under normal circumstances, they would have flipped that and put the more attractive person in the front of the mm-hmm. frame. And the series is called The Guide, 5 stars in Kyoto. So as you can probably assume, this probably has to do with travel.
Right.
You know, because you're thinking a guide, oh, maybe a tour guide, and you'd be absolutely right. So the main character who, they just call him the intern, like they haven't even told us what his name is. So it goes to show you that they're really not caring about him as the main protagonist. I feel like from this episode that we're actually going to get an ensemble protagonist. So we'll get vignettes of stories that will all bleed into one cohesive theme.
Okay.
Essentially. But anyway, so this guy, who they won't even give you his name, is starting at this very prestigious travel agency. Like, they have the best guides in Kyoto. And this kid comes from money, just graduated from college, has never had to work a day in his life, really, and just managed to charm his way into this job. And, like, he's got a mentor lady who's just like, keep your head down, shut up, and just, if someone tells you to do something, just do it. I don't want to hear you complain. And they have a boss who is the creepy old guy from the front of the, on the front cover, and he was a self-made man. He didn't have anything handed to him, so he doesn't like this type of person who feels entitled because things just magically happen for him. So this man seems to have it in his mind that he wants to get it to the point that our protagonist, and I'm using air quotes here because, like I said, the way that they're setting it up, I don't think he's really our protagonist. But he wants to get rid of this guy because he just doesn't believe in his life. Oh, he's rich. He doesn't really need this job. I'd rather give it to somebody who needs the work and wants to do the work. And the guy's already kind of fucking up with mail orders and coffee orders and stuff like that. So he clearly isn't in this job because he loves Kyoto and wants to, you know, share his passion and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So the boss sends out this guy. And he's like, one of my tour guides got sick. And it's like, it's a really simple crowd. They're always usually really happy with the itineraries we set up. We need you to go out there and tour guide. And of course, the protagonist doesn't want to, you know, say no because, one, he kind of can't. And two, you know, he's trying to impress this guy so this guy will not try to, you know, get him fired. And he goes out with the itinerary and he meets this group and he finds out later that this group has always caused problems to the agency because the clients are never happy with whatever they do. They want a 5-star restaurant, they get it. Oh, but it was 10 minutes after the time that they wanted to go. Like, they always find something mm-hmm. negative about the trip, and they send people's reviews plummeting down because it's not up to their standard. And he doesn't realize that he's been set up. And he's fucking everything up. Like, they were set for a dinner, they don't make it to the inn in time, so they won't reopen up for them. The hotel that they were in didn't have enough beds, like, and he's following the paper that his boss gave him. His boss purposely sets him up to fail. Kind of drop him down a peg or two. But at the end of it, the head guy who was being toured around was kind of like, you know, thank you, but didn't realize that, you know, he was going to go back and complain anyway. So when he gets back to the office, his boss, the protagonist's boss, is waiting for him, and he's literally like, this was the worst tour ever. You think you can do this? You clearly can't. I don't even know why we have you here. Oh, wait, yes, I do. You're a snotty rich kid who doesn't really understand the concept of hard work and what it really means to do this job and just get out of my face and blah, 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 blah. And he's like, and now, he's like, we have to pretty much give them a better trip for free on us. He's like, so you've got 24 hours to plan out the best itinerary ever for this client that you know absolutely nothing about. So, of course, this newcomer is like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do. I'm like, let me hit all these fancy restaurants. None of them will take reservations. He's trying to get them time to go see these temples and stuff, and nothing is working. And he's freaking out. And he thinks he's going to have the best idea while taking a shit. So he literally decides to go to the bathroom to, you know, think, have his man time. And while he's there, he hears this knocking on the stall. And, like, at first he's like, I think I'm imagining things, but then it gets louder and louder. And he's like, you know, I'm trying to poop here, And, you know, the door's obviously shut, it's occupied, and the knocks keep happening. And he pulls up his pants super quick, doesn't wipe, by the
way.
I noticed. He swings the door open, and there's a lady there. And it's the lady from the front of the cover. And she is just, like, kind of staring at him, because apparently he had been talking about all these restaurants and stuff, and how he's going to lose his job and all this type of stuff. And she's just like...
Wait, it was a co-ed bathroom?
No.
Okay, no. So there's a lady in the
men's
room.
There's a lady in the men's room.
All right.
And, like, and he's so he's distraught that there's a lady, so he thought he had walked into the female room. So, like, he zips up his pants, rushes past the sink, doesn't wash his hands, walks out and stares at the sign and realizes it's the men's room. And when he turns back around, she's standing there, this lady, and she's just like... Yeah, she's like, I don't see how you would get any of these. This restaurant, you need to know people. This one, you have to reserve like 2 months in advance. She's like, I know the people from this one, though. You could, you know, if you let them know that you know me, maybe this could help. And he's like, who are you? And, like, she's spouting all this stuff. And he's just like, how do you know who are you? And, like, he looks at her badge, and it just says CMC on it. So it doesn't even have her name on it. And he's just like, CMC. And he's like, are you like a superior? And she's like, I wouldn't necessarily say that. And he's like, you've got to help me. And she's just like, I don't know. I'm like, maybe you should figure this out for yourself and stuff. So she turns around and she just walks away. And he follows her down this corridor that all of a sudden starts to become more dingy and gross. And it looks more backwater, like... the back of a building, or like a restaurant staff entrance. Mm-hmm. So it's looking less and less pristine and clean, and more like, you know, the janitorial staff type of area and stuff like that.
You were about to say genitalia.
Yeah, I was, but that's not what I meant. Anyway, so he follows her down to her desk in the CMC department, which is the central management center. Mm-hmm. And you find out, because he's just like, oh my god, he's like, they all have these high titles, like director and all this stuff. And he's like, what do you guys do here? And, like, none of them want to tell him exactly what it is. And this lady, who he just has the conversation with, sits at her desk and she's got these puzzles. She's enamored with solving puzzles and riddles. She just sits down and she just starts building up this little... they look kind of like Tetris pieces, and if you do it right, and there's apparently like 12 different combinations for this puzzle, it will make a solid block if you do it right. And like everyone's like, oh, you don't worry about her. I'm like, she really, like, once she's in her zone with her puzzle, she's really not worth talking to. And he's like, well, I really need her help. She gave me some great tips on, you know, something, and I have to build this itinerary by tomorrow, and if I don't, I'm going to lose my job. And this old gentleman who's in this office is just like, so you think they'll fire you, or do you think they would send you to the disposal station? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, this company is famous for finding ways to get rid of troublemakers or whistleblowers that they don't like, or people who just don't fall in line. And they, if they like their work ethic enough, at least to not fire them, they send them to the disposal center, which is the janitorial department. And he's like, no, I've never heard of such a thing. And he's like, well, surprising, sir, you're standing in the middle of it. So the CMC is the polite
way of the janitors.
Yeah, yes. So he's like, you guys all clean toilets? You know, and like finally the lady who's doing the puzzle solves it. And she's like, yeah, that's why I was in the men's bathroom. I was in there cleaning when you came in and took a poop. And he's like, oh my god, I didn't know, and I'm so sorry. And he's like, but you seem to know all this stuff. And she's like, look. She's like, I don't know if I want to help you. And, like, her whole team's like, why not? Let's rile them up a little bit up there in the travel agency. So she's like, let me think about it. She's like, if I could come up with something, I'll let you know. So they kick him out. The next day, he goes to his desk, and there's an itinerary on his table. And he's looking at all of it. And he's like, there's no way that this is actual. He's like, I think she's just teasing me and thinks I can try to pull all this stuff off. But they had already all been approved. So she manages to build this entire trip in one night and got all of the connections in order to do this. So you find out in this episode that everyone who's in the disposal station right now, the CMC, were all part of that particular agency. One was a driver of a bus. Something happened on his watch that got him demoted to the disposal center.
Oh, okay.
But they all
the island of misfit toys.
Essentially. And the lady who sent him this itinerary was the best travel guide ever. They called her the master. You could give her a basic synopsis of the client, and she would always plan the most perfect trips for them. So it obviously poses that question to you of, well, then what happened or what did she do that led her to be demoted to, you know, being a janitor? So anyway, as the episode goes, you know, she has her contract driver friend who's part of the disposal center, you know, drive their tour bus. The other chick down there who has, like, a rotten attitude, they put her in a kimono because she was also a tour guide, and her personality changes when she's at work. So, okay. Like, she goes from being, you know, very sundry and very mean and bitter to when she's got a kimono on and she's talking about history.
A lady.
She becomes very light, and it's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and it's hilarious. And this guy, you know, the intern, who still at this point, we still don't know what his name is.
Okay.
You know, it's just like, how does she know all this stuff? And how do you guys all know how to do this? And blah, blah, blah. And they're just like, we'll fill you in later. Let's just make sure that, you know, this goes smoothly. And so the tour guide, the group comes back, and you find out that the four, because it's two men and two women, and it's a family. And it's a rich, upstanding family. And their son just got married to a girl. And the father was so in love with what he did with his wife for a honeymoon that he wanted them to have his honeymoon again. Mm-hmm. Even though his son and his now wife are nothing like him and his wife were. But he was pushing his ideals onto them, which was making it really hard. Not to mention, who wants their parents on their honeymoon?
Right.
You know, and stuff. And you could tell throughout the thing that the new wife, her name was Emmy, was not, you know, didn't seem to really be enjoying anything because she felt like she was being judged by, you know, the parents. Mm-hmm. And at one point, she just leaves the whole tour guide at all, and it's like a big deal when she goes missing. And the female, the genius, the travel master lady, kind of predicted that was kind of what was going on and had designed her trip to cause her to have this upset for her to go to her husband and be like, you know, you're kind of a mommy's boy and a daddy's boy. I don't want to live with your parents. This is our honeymoon. They shouldn't be, like, it gave her the courage to speak her mind. And this is stuff that I wouldn't think a person would be able to infer from one encounter. But the pacing is really good. The direction is really good. You don't feel lost and stuff. And they actually give you all the historical stuff that they're showing, because they're actually showing, like, historical sites and stuff in the show. They actually tell you all that stuff in English so that you also get to learn along with the people who are touring these things. Like I said, that's only the first episode. The second episode will actually come out in the next 2 days from when this podcast gets aired. So if you like that type of stuff, it's a series that I definitely feel like it's only going to get better from here. Like, right. I'm very interested to see what other type of tour group she's going to get, how, if they're going to try to build any romantic tension, how that's going to happen, because this will be the first time that we really have a Hollywood standard, not attractive person in a romantic, going to be put in a romantic situation. Now, on the other side of this, I'm a big fan of, how do I put it, slice of life, high school, rom-com-y type of animes and J-dramas. Like, I like Switch mm-hmm. Girl.
Yep.
I like Mischievous Kiss. I like Boys Over Flowers. I love that kind of stuff.
I did like Boys Over Flowers.
I will eat that shit Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and also a midnight snack if I happen to be awake. So when I saw this other series, I was a little taken aback because my first initial impression from the cover art that they showed was that if you had flipped it and put a female in the front with the parade of characters in the back, it could have, you would know exactly what kind of series it was going to be. Okay. But because they put this dude who looked, you know, had raspberry hair, was like very red, and, you know, in anime standards, you know, that's not a natural color, so you know he possibly dyes it or he's foreign. You know, he kind of had a scowl on his face, so either he was a rich nudie kid or was, like, from the Yakuza.
Right.
Or, you know, was just a kind of just a thug mm-hmm. who really just didn't want to be part of the mainstream, whatever. Right. And so the title of this drama was called Why Can't Seika Tutin, Age 16, Get a Girlfriend? And then it opens up with this big mansion, like an aria is playing, these doors open, and there's a butler and a maid, and they're just like, Master, it's so nice to see you home. So the main character, Seiya, because he is the protagonist of this series, has been away for years. And he finally has come home to Japan to pursue a normal high school life. And
okay, so he's having somehow an abnormal high school life?
So here's the thing. So, like, apparently, like, when he goes to school, because, like, he transfers to this new school, and he writes his name, and he gives this brilliant introduction. He's great at sports. He's great at music because he's rich. He's cultured. He's educated. And everyone is just fawning over him. And he's got this cool demeanor on the outside, but deep down, all of his internal dialogue is the most awkward dialogue ever. And you find out that our protagonist is uncomfortable, like eerily uncomfortable.
He's introverted?
No, he is like awkward in social situations with girls. Real, and not even like foreign girls, not a problem. It's particularly Japanese girls, you know.
Okay.
So he's like, no. He's like, I'm going back to Japan because I'm conquering my fear of Japanese women, and I'm getting a Japanese girlfriend, and I'm going to do it like this. And he has like a dating Japanese girls for dummies. He's doing all this research on how to. He's reading all these girl mangas back at his mansion. He doesn't do this at school. And he's just like, I'm going to find the best girl, and I'm going to make her my girlfriend with all these tactics, you know. And in the first episode, it's really kind of hilarious because there's a quiet girl in the back who reads a lot of girl manga, and he sees this manga, and it's the latest issue of one that he's reading. And, like, he's looking really cool, but in his mind, he's like, I want to ask her if I can read it because it's going to have tips of what I need to woo Tomo, because he meets a girl on the first day, and he's like, she shall be my girlfriend. And I will woo her with the tactics that I learned here in Japan about how to court Japanese chicks. Like, and this is all internal dialogue. This is not what he looks like on the outside. And so he finally was like, ma'am, could I please, like, look at your material? And of course she hands it over because she's got the hots for him. All the girls do. And it shows one of those very tropish things where a girl during a test drops her eraser, he goes to reach for it, and he's...
And their hands touch.
And, exactly, so you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes back to his house, and he orders his butler to get, like, 18 different types of erasers. He, like, measures out how far the desks are apart, so he'd know how far he'd have to flick for a possible eraser to, like, you know, fall in the right place for him to be able to do all this. And he's plotting out having this happen. He's trying to initiate the meeting for the romance to happen. And they finally have a test, and he's like, I'm ready. And he has his desk filled with erasers. And during the test, he's trying to flick them so that they bounce and hit near her foot so that he can do this. And the whole time, he messes up. But right near the end of the test, she, in fact, does drop her eraser. It is too perfect, too good to be true. And as it starts to bounce close to him, he goes to reach for it, but it bounces back, and he ends up chasing the eraser all the way down the row until he hits his head on the teacher's desk. It's very anime paced in a live action setting, which sometimes does not work.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Is it based off of an anime? Because the setup sounds
You would think
so...
it could be. And now I feel like if it isn't, it's going to be.
Right.
Because it's just, there's too many homages to that type of anime that it can't not be. But anyway, that comedy is pretty much very slapstick, very in your face. He's constantly falling, he's constantly having monologues, you know, in that cloud, that mind cloud that we all see in animes and stuff. You know, he gets that little hashtag sign, like when he gets angry, which apparently that's their symbol for annoyance, is that little
pound sign?
Yeah. And stuff, and I mean, like,
I love that you call it the little hashtag, so I'm like, no, it's a pound sign.
It's from a phone, I know. Press the pound key. But it's not a key, it's just the sign, it's the hashtag sign. Anyway.
Pound sign. Yep.
And it's just, it's too cute, and I love the fact, for once, we have a protagonist who is awkward with the opposite sex, and it's not, like the overly extroverted, you know, girl female.
who's really introverted. Right, or the because other way around. In most K-dramas, it's usually always the girl going after the guy, whether it's the bad boy or, like, the rich guy, and she's unassuming, and she has to conquer her fears and understand herself and get past his controlling mother. Or,
oh God,
who's a father.
Yeah.
Or the family that owns the biggest company in Korea, China, wherever the drama sets. But so it definitely is an interesting flip.
I like it. Like, I love the fact that he is insecure. And you find out that...
And he's doing all the things that the girl would be doing in this situation.
Absolutely. And one of the funniest things in the whole episode is that at one point when he goes home, he's just like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if my heart's ready. And his butler's like, well, you ran away from Japan when you were 8 because this was traumatic, you know, so if you're not ready, you're not ready. And he's like, no. He's like, I'm 16 now. I gave myself 8 years. I need to conquer this. And it shows a flashback to when he was 8 and he was in middle school. A girl that he thought really liked him gave him chocolates on Valentine's Day. And he was happy. And he was like, oh my God, this is what love is. And this is how love starts. And he hears some giggling. And it's the girl who just gave him chocolates talking to her friend. And she's like, yeah. She's like, I thought Seiya was going to be like super cool about it. But he got real awkward and shit. And she's like, I can't even deal with that. It was super geeky, you know. And they start laughing about how awkward he was. And that broke his heart. And he said, I'll never date Japanese girls. And he fled to his foreign father, because I forgot to stipulate that this was foreign. And he ran away because he didn't want to deal with Japanese women after that scarring incident.
I hate bitches.
As an 8-year-old boy, this poor rich boy had to run away because he couldn't deal with Japanese girls. When
poor
he was 8.
Gay.
Anyway, they're both simulcasting right now on Crunchyroll. I'm sure you could also find them on Drama Fever, but that's not where I'm watching them. I feel like the first one, The Guide, is paced a little bit better only because it's not trying to mimic a style.
Right. It's just trying to tell a story.
So it's got its narrative locked in. And I feel like this other one is kind of going for style that will allude to a certain type of storytelling if you're a kind who's ever read manga. Switch Girl did that, too, also. So if you like this one, you should also look into Switch Girl because I think you would enjoy that one, too.
Well, Switch Girl is almost like the direct opposite of this one, right?
Oh, it absolutely is.
You've got this super stylized chick who, at home, then becomes basically
the
herself.
Grossest, most... dirtiest
and is awkward
completely
with people in that instance.
Yes, that series is, I find that series is probably the most hilarious for me on the simple fact that she meets a super hot guy at school who completely rebuffs her. And now Switch Girl is based off of an anime and a manga, and in the manga She's encountered Arata, who is the boy in that series, countless times before, but didn't realize it because he wore really thick glasses that you couldn't see through. Like, if you remember Melvin from Sailor Moon, it was those type of glasses, so you didn't see his face. But she happened to catch him one day on the roof without them, and he was using those glasses to hide his super attractive face because girls can only see his outside beauty and never question what his insides are. And her thing is, and her name is Nika in Switch Girl, is that she's had boyfriends before, but none of them have ever been able to stand her true self, which is the gross one when she turns off her appearance and just, you know, lives in safety panties and likes the smell of her own dirty feet and plays video games all weekend while scratching her butt. Like...
Yeah. Pretty much.
It's pretty funny. They're all really good series, so I suggest that you go and you take a peek at them and let me know what you think. And that's all that I have today. So what?
Well, the last piece that I have, and I want to make sure that I get it right because, you know, sometimes I get things a little bit wrong when it comes to anime, so I don't want to mess that up.
Right, okay.
Is the Winter Guide second part of streaming anime, so the simulcast stuff.
Okay.
So for a big chunk of the winter season, we've already gotten through things that only have one arc or the first arc of things, like Aldenoa Zero.
Yep, and, I saw that.
Yona of the Wind Deep. I can't remember the whole thing. I just call it
That's in my queue to watch.
You need to watch that. You'll love that.
Well, I'm watching Dead Man Wonderland right now.
Yeah, you gotta finish that. And then you gotta get to the end of it. I'm like, alright, ready for next season. There is no next
season. You're gonna be so upset. Oh, is it like Spice and Wolf? We're never getting a season 2?
Probably never getting a season
2. Oh no! That makes me so sad.
Dead Man's doing well enough. I hope that it gets a second season. Because I've pretty much given up on anybody finishing Hellsing Ultimate.
Nope, that's not gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen.
Nope.
I'm so upset about that.
Sorry, bro.
Anyway, second part for things that do have second seasons, and for those that don't, there's a bunch of new series starting for the second half of winter break. And I'm only gonna mention a couple because I love their first seasons. And then there are some that kind of look really interesting that'd be, like, right up your alley. So, you know, there's that. First and foremost, Tokyo Ghoul, second season started running.
I haven't even started the first season
yet. Yeah, you need to do that. It's actually really good. It's dark and it's got some gore, but not over-the-top gore.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with gore in my anime.
It's not another level gore.
Okay.
So it's not
good because that actually kind of pushed the boundaries.
Yeah,
that
got
real. That got real close.
Yeah, it really did. But like the first one that I think is right up your alley is Cute High Earth Defense Club Love.
Oh no!
I'm not gonna say it in its actual language because I'm gonna mess it up.
All right, I wanna kind of assume
it's a magical boy.
Wait, no, I was gonna guess. I was either going to guess, like, a boy idol group or, like...
Nope. It's a magical boy comedy.
Oh, no.
On the series.
I have like, to watch this now.
Legit, they look like Sailor Moon Sailor Boys.
I see a male Uranus.
Yep.
I see a Chibi Moon grown up.
Yep.
I see a Venus.
Yep.
I see a Jupiter. And I see an Amy.
Yep.
Or pretty Mercury.
Pretty much. So, it basically... The boys are a bunch of slackers in their school, and so the thing that they do, they're charged by a magical wombat.
A wombat.
Yep.
Okay.
To transform and
save God, so they have pretty boy transformations.
They have pretty boy transformations.
I have to watch
this. I told you, right?
This is right up my alley.
And so you can catch this on Crunchyroll, and you can catch it on Funimation.
Okay.
So that's rocking. It started on January 6th. Then you have Kamisama Kiss season 2.
I feel like you've talked to me about this.
I have, and I think I tried to make you watch it.
You did.
It's about the girl who becomes a god,
right?
And her familiar doesn't want to be her familiar.
Yes, he's kind of cold and and he slowly starts warming up because he starts taking on the role of actually being her familiar.
Right, and the reason why he's really cold is because he was abandoned by the original land god. Oh. He was like, "I'm going out to the city. I'll be right back," and didn't come back for like hundreds of years.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Got stood up.
Yeah. And previously in his life before that, and he's a fox deity, so, you know, as far as other, like, familiars and stuff, they're always, the fox is always looked down upon.
Yep.
That
or the cat, apparently, in the Chinese zodiac.
Yeah. And so, in some flashbacks, you learn that at one point in time, he was kind of in love with a human, and it didn't work out.
Oh, well,
and,
yeah.
And in the way that it didn't work out is I think that she actually died.
Oh, well.
And that was the thing that kind of soured him on that. It was like how short human life is.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying really hard not to fall for Nanami because she's so his fucking type.
Right.
So that's kind of what happens in the first arc. The second arc has just started where basically Nanami has decided that she's going to give it her all on being both a human girl going to high school still, as well as being the land god for the area. And they're about to have a meeting of deities.
And she's got to now go and... Oh.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I hope she doesn't get trapped in Soul Society.
I hope she doesn't get trapped, too. But it's really good. It's got a couple of moments of seriousness that are very well balanced with moments of levity.
Okay.
So, that one's up on my list. I'll be watching that. New season of Dog Day started, which is that super cute one where a human gets brought over to be the hero of each of these bad, quote-unquote, battling nations. The cat nation, the dog nation, I forget what the third nation is, but there's three of them, and they each choose a hero, and one the heroes that they choose are all friends.
Of course they are.
And the battles that they have are basically games, because they were like, we learned that, like, war and stuff is really bad, so what we do is we have a big competition. And so it's like...
So no one's gonna die.
It's basically like a big tough mutter between the dogs and the cats and...
The birds? I think
the birds might be winged people.
Can't okay. remember.
And so they all look human, except, you know, the birds have, like, wingies, or the cats have cat ears and right. tails, and so the dogs, and all this kind of stuff. But that season has started, and it's super cute. I really enjoyed it. The one that I'm watching right now, I feel like I'm probably gonna love. I'm only two episodes in, so I'm gonna see the rest of it. So they,
right.
they sucked me in, but I'm not in love with it yet.
Okay.
Okay. And it's called The Testament of Sister New Devil.
I was looking at that.
I feel like you'd like it. So it basically looks like it's going to be a fantasy blended into the real world type
right, yep.
thing. And the protagonist is a girl who is, in fact...
The devil?
Basically the devil.
Okay.
And there are wars going on right now, and she was not cast out, but sent away so that she wouldn't be harmed or be negatively impacted. Oh, kind of like
Devil and Realist.
Yeah, kind of like...
Got locked away and...
Right. So, but she was just sent away so she could study and live a happy life and things like that.
Because, you know, Satan deserves a happy life.
And her father, who was Satan...
Real Satan.
Daddy
Satan.
The devil, was going to take care of things. But there was an attempted coup, and he got killed. So now she's the rightful heir to the throne.
Shit.
And she's basically hiding in the real world to build up her magic and her ability to take things over. And so she thinks, she and her companion, who's a succubus, but is a purple-haired-looking little girl, thinks that she's fooled this guy into thinking that he's married this woman, and the two of them are his daughters, so they're a new family. So he brings his new daughters home to meet his son, and then immediately has to go off traveling, and he's like, well, let's get a family photo first, okay, and then I'm gonna go, and your brother's gonna take care of you. So he goes off, and the girls are like, get the fuck out of the house. And they try to kill him, well, harm him, so he'll leave. And he takes a magic punch, is the best way I can describe it, to the face. So you know how, like, in a lot of magic things, a talisman or, like, Celtic design appears in midair that's neon, and that's supposed to be a magic summoning?
Yes.
He basically gets hit in the face with one of those. And so they're like, well, he's knocked out. He's not going to remember anything. I'm going to zap his memory, and he's going to leave. And so he's like, no, you're going to leave. Turns out he and his father are a hero. They left their hero village, because heroes hunt devils. And so they're not really subscribing to the whole hero thing. They're keeping it on the DL.
right.
So his dad knew that they were devils. And after that fight, he kicks the girls out. And he calls his dad. And his dad's like, hey, here's the thing that you have to remember, though. Because we're not with the village and all this kind of stuff. And he sends in the picture where they're all smiling and happy as a family. And he goes and he tracks down the girls and he brings them home. So basically what's going to happen is this hero is going to become the champion of the devil. So it's more like Maoyu.
Yep. That's right.
But not set so far in the past.
Right.
Yeah. So that's probably why it's going to win me over, because I really liked Maoyu. there's another one that I think is pretty badass, and that's the second series of Tokyo Ghoul.
Okay.
Running. So badass. So badass.
All the badass, wow.
It really is. The action in it is ridiculous. And I think I may have said that before, but I'm going to say it again. Tokyo Ghoul, second season. I'm so glad to see it. Because I was really, really afraid that it wasn't going to come back. And then the final one that I'm watching is Aldenoa Zero, which the first season probably was one of the more interesting seasons of anime that I've watched in a long time. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. Yes, it does have some mecha battles in it, but it's really
You love your mechas.
I do. I love
Ninja
mechas.
Ninja loves the mechas. It's true, true, true.
I do. I love mechas. But Aldenoa is not so much mainly focused on the mecha battles. It's really about the politics and backstabbing and the fighting going on between Martians, who are basically humans that were exiles to Mars, and through whatever providence happened, became a much more advanced race over hundreds of years. But they've always been bitter that they don't control the Earth as well. So they've decided to fabricate some reasons to battle Earth, because it's been forbidden. And the way that they do that is a bunch of Martians plan and plot and scheme to have the princess of Mars killed while she's on an ambassadorial
mission. Oh, jeez, let's murder our princess.
Right. And so the princess is murdered, but it turns out it wasn't her. It was a
body double or whatever.
Yes, because she was feeling a little unsure about traveling to Earth. No, she had no idea that, like, people wanted to kill her, but she wasn't sure that she'd know how to talk to people and be embarrassed. So during the parade that she was sitting in, her body double was in there, so her body double was killed. The Martians thought that she was killed. She was alive, and she was like, no, we've got to work this out. Meets a human that she starts to really like and understand, and starts working to try to get a message back to her father so that he'll stop all the bloodshed that's happening in her name, because she's not dead.
Okay. All right.
And then it goes from there. So it's more about the intrigue and the backstab and the politics and that stuff. And it also has mecha battles. So it doesn't suck, is basically what I'm saying. It does not suck. So I highly recommend Aldenoa Zero. And that's on Crunchyroll. It's on Hulu. There's pretty much no place that you can't find it. I believe you can even find it on YouTube. I highly recommend that one. I'm definitely recommending Tokyo Ghoul, getting through the first season, and then checking out the new episodes that are running on that. And then one that kind of surprised me, I'm not going to lie, because I really didn't think that I was going to enjoy it, is one called Death Parade. And this you can watch on Funimation. Basically, it's a weird take on most of the things that you see when you series. When you die, you either go to heaven or hell or purgatory, right?
Right.
Well, with Death Parade, if two people die at the same moment in time, they're actually taken to this weird fucking cafe where they have to play a game against each other to kill each other in order to be able to leave the cafe and move on to a place.
Okay, really?
Yes.
But yes, they already died. So wait, person A and person B both die
at the exact same moment, yep. And so before they can move on to
heaven or hell or purgatory or whatever,
they have to battle each other, because one will not move on if they both go at the same time.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you not want to die right at the same time as somebody.
Yep. And their lives are basically what they're putting on the line. So I've only watched one episode. It is so fucking dark, but it's done so well, I think that I'm going to enjoy it. I think it's going to become like my Dusk Maiden of Amnesia.
Which also played a lot with darkness, but also...
And needs to hurry up with its second season.
I don't think we're getting one.
I think we are. Just like another is coming.
another. I think they're having a hard time because they really opened and pushed the bar with how far anime can go in terms of gore and dark tones. That they, I don't know if you can make something as dark and gritty and.
Yeah, you can.
I don't know.
Yeah, you can.
But I look forward to watching a chunk of these, and also look forward to being able to say you told me so a billion times. Yeah. In the future.
I am. We have a bunch that I'm going to tell you I told you so about. So that's it. That's my anime. That's my recommendation. That's my Nintendo Direct. You know, all that jazz, all that stuff. We are not going to PAX South. It's okay. We're not crying about it.
Nope.
But we will be at PAX East.
Yes.
And we hope that we will see you at 8-Bit Boston 2, which we are co-sponsoring with Structure Network, Project Triforce, and Able Gamers. For those of you who are coming to PAX East, trust me, it's going down. You want to be at that party. It's insane. Insane. So with that, this is where I got to start plugging all the different ways you can get Esh into your life. Starting with our news and reviews over at our website, www.egmnow.com. Make sure that you subscribe to our page when you go over there. That's egmnow.com/Electric Sisterhood. And when you subscribe, the moment that we put out a new review or preview piece on the website, you'll be notified. You can comment, share on social, which we highly, highly appreciate. So make sure that you hit us up over there. And if you want to get our podcast, then you want to make sure that you visit us on the web at www.electricsisterhood.com. And you get our podcast there as well as in iTunes, either on the desktop application or on your iOS device via the podcast application. Just search for the Eshcast and subscribe. But you can also find our podcast on Stitcher Radio, on VOG Network at vognetwork.com. On Tuesdays, it airs right before Anime Jam Session, so you can get so much anime and so much game into your life at vognetwork.com. You can also find our podcast in the Microsoft Store, again searching for the Eshcast, or just pretty much any podcast search engine. Just look for us. You'll find us. We's out there. If you're listening to our show, you should make sure that you check out some of the other great, amazing shows that fly under the Esh banner, like No Borders, No Race, held down by KBD, our homie. On Tuesdays, you'll get new episodes. If it's indie, it's in there.
Ah, I see what you did there.
See what I did there? It's quite clever. On Wednesdays, if you need beats for your feet, then you need to be checking out geekagro.com for what our homie Deuces Wild is putting down, spinning, putting together. If it's trap, if it's EDM, if it's bass that needs to be in your face, it's on geekagro.com. And on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program, call in live and just share whatever's on your mind. Games, TV, books, your feet, whatevs. It's all game on the Issues Program. With all that done, the only other thing is I can remind you of are our social channels. You can interact with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Esh. If you've got a question or something you want to recommend that we check out, hit us up on our Facebook page and let us know. Just leave a comment on the wall, and we'll let you know if we'll check it out and if it'll be a topic for a podcast in the future. You can also follow us for all the news that's fit to read on Twitter, at ESH News. Add us to your feed. You won't regret it. So with that, I'm going to turn to my sis and say, Ayo, sis.
Hello.
What shit you digging this week?
3-day fucking weekend.
Yeah, boy.
What shit are you digging this week?
I'll be honest.
Three-day weekends?
I mean, 3-day weekends are the shit. 3-day weekends are the shit. But what I'm really digging, booze, because I'm over 21. And I got cherries that have been soaking in all kinds of vodka that I'm going to be eating.
Oh,
because
shit.
I am an adult. Okay. And that's how 3-day weekends go down. So as always, I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, people.
Be classy.
Go Pats!